Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And if you're thinking to yourself, wait, shouldn't AI just do the math? Well, maybe a little different kind of math.
And okay? You never trust it when it does math. We've seen that so many times before where you're like, wait a minute, those numbers do not line up.
I've literally said, hey, what do these numbers add up to? It needs to be 100%. And it's like, yep, everything looks good. And I'm like, I just put it in the spreadsheet. It's totally wrong. And it's like, nope, it's fine. I go, check your math again. And it's like, oh, I'll be darned. It is wrong. Sorry about that. I'm like, seriously, you doubled down on that error.
Oh, yeah. I was dealing with that exact same thing today. AI wasn't pulling live data. You have to always tell it, like, please use accurate data, because it defaults to sometimes using stuff from like 3 months ago. And you're like, that's not today.
Well, this is all relevant to today's conversation. We're going to get into some of the idiosyncrasies. And if you're thinking to yourself, how does this have anything to do with either my wealth management, or it does, more so than you realize, because a lot of what's been driving the macro themes in the marketplace seem to be connected to the proliferation of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Like the biggest companies in the S&P 500 now, almost all of them are AI-connected companies.
In one way or another. Even, you know, you look at a company like Cat, right? Where it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, they're making, you know, engines and dozers and all sorts of things. Well, a lot of those are now running on AI, where there's a computer inside the cab that's being able to do very, very particular things at a very precise level. So, yeah, they're all in a way almost.
Well, everything seems tech, sure.
Yeah.
But the really big companies, Google, Microsoft.
Oh, like the big top 10. You know, yeah.
Even Amazon with all their data centers.
Right? Yeah, AWS is a huge tech stack.
And so all of this stuff is very, very AI dependent. And what the market seems to be doing is saying, well, right now we're making, I'll call it a hyper investment in artificial intelligence. We are just pouring money into this stuff, oftentimes far faster than these companies are able to actually return profits.
Right. We're kind of speculating on future revenue and earnings and stuff.
Yeah. So let's talk about what that means and why this, I believe, is really relevant, because for a lot of our listeners are familiar with this, because a lot of listeners that kind of mirror me or even a little bit older in our community. I think that there's a lot of younger folks that have really never seen the market get way out over its skis. It's been 18 years since a significant correction, right? 2008 was the last significant correction the market experienced. Prior to that was 2000. And for many younger investors, the idea of the dot-com bubble is a history note. They weren't there for it. So it just doesn't resonate as to what that really means. Now, to a lot of our listeners, they were around for the dot-com burst. And so they remember terms like the new economy. Or they remember when everybody was saying, well, Warren Buffett's washed out, right? Everybody else is making 40, 50% per year. Warren Buffett's making 9. He's yesterday's news.
Yeah.
And all of that ended up proving out to be verifiably false after the fact. So what, Matt, if I were to ask you to try to explain to our listeners what appears to be going on with AI, how would you describe it?
a greedy frenzy, right? That's the way I look at it. Everyone doesn't want to miss the next big thing. And so everyone seems to be piling in the boat and saying, well, what's the next, kind of NVIDIA, or what's the next Microsoft? What's the next big thing? And people are just throwing money around like crazy, trying to grab onto shares of what they believe will be the next big investment.
Yeah, I'm seeing some really fascinating behaviors right now. Here's the other thing. We're hearing about lots of IPOs. Big talk around IPOs.
Like the biggest of all time.
Right. Yeah. Which that's, I think SpaceX is projected as the biggest of all time currently.
Yep. Yep.
But what are some of the other big IPOs that are being discussed?
There's two
right
more.
Now?
OpenAI is set to potentially IPO this year, and then Anthropic as well.
Okay. So these are two very outspoken public artificial intelligence companies.
Yep.
And then SpaceX is the, we're going to go to space, right?
Yeah.
The first private sector space company.
And they also have a ton of AI embedded in that too. They're like Colossus is part of SpaceX, the supercomputing for Grok now. So it's going to IPO, and a lot of people are pretty excited about it.
Yeah. To me, it's fascinating. Of course, I'm not going to get into the characterizations
details
that come with, you know, the Elon Musk ecosystem, and what comes with that center of influence is pretty remarkable.
You know what I think kind of is resonating with people is so many people regret missing out on Tesla, right? Like people didn't own shares of Tesla, so they missed Elon's version one, you know,
mm-hmm.
And now it's like, oh, he's got another company. This is my chance to grab the next Tesla. And so the buzz is insane.
Yes, I believe that's true. I often say it's about that. It used to be the shoe shine guy,
mm-hmm.
which is like no longer a thing. But now it's your Uber driver. That's kind of what I say. Like when you start getting stock tips from your Uber driver, it's like, I have news for you. Probably not a tip.
Yeah.
It's like that's pretty broadly known at that point when everybody is talking about it. The question then becomes, is the math right?
Oh, man, I'm going to butcher this. So for everyone listening, throw this out. Don't listen to me. But I heard that the expected IPO on this thing is supposed to value SpaceX similar to like Amazon.
Yeah, it's like a multi-trillion dollar company out of the gate.
Yeah, right out of the gate. But if you actually look at like revenue and earnings and stuff, it's just a fraction of what Amazon's stuff is. So it's like, wait, you're going to value these companies the same with market cap, but they don't earn like a tenth of the money.
I think there's a huge misunderstanding out there in the general population about how these things even get valued.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, sure. Let's talk about the concept of market capitalization.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that means? When you say market cap,
yeah,
does our listener understand that? I think a bunch of our listeners do.
I think we should clarify it.
Yeah.
So you take like how many shares that are outstanding, and mm-hmm. then you multiply it by the price that it's trading at, and then that would tell you the value of the company, right? So if there's 100 shares of a company, that's a really low number. But if mm-hmm. there's 100 shares and each of them are trading at $5 a share, it's a $500 company.
So I'm going to take this one step further, though. Oftentimes, the number of shares in circulation is not the same as the number of shares in existence.
That's true.
So,
the companies hold stuff back.
Right. So in this case, it could be that SpaceX decides, hey, we need to raise, let's say we need to raise $100 billion of capital in order to build the things that we want to build.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you just suggested that the company's valuation is going to be $2 trillion. Well, $100 billion would be roughly 5% of that, if my math is correct, which means they would only have to sell 5% of the outstanding shares
in order to raise the capital that they need
at the price of $100 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And that would imply a $2 trillion market value if they fully subscribe, meaning all the shares get sold for the price that they bring them to market for.
Yeah.
And so that's how the company is then presumed to be valued is, well, we sold 5% of the company and everybody was willing to pay this much for it. Therefore, the entire company is implied to be worth what that. And then what happens is the shares start trading amongst the general population after that. And then what do? We say, well, whatever the last trade is that we saw on the secondary market, that's the stock markets, well, then we assign the last traded value to every single stock out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is that right? And if you're over there, if you have an opinion, yes, no, or otherwise, I have news for you. Doesn't matter whether or not it's right. It's what happens. That's how we do it. So it's the last traded price we impute the value to the entire organization. It's possible, for whatever reason, that somebody was willing to pay a whole lot more than maybe they should have, or that they're not willing to pay that much for it. And that's the question is, well, in the future, will the value still be at or above that price?
Right.
That's what the market's really trying to figure out is, did we get it right?
You I think people struggle with the numbers, like putting it like side by side, apples to apples, like the numbers that we're throwing around. Because I heard a report today, you know, we talked about those three, right? SpaceX, OpenAI,
and
Anthropic. Yeah. And some estimates are showing an expected valuation for the three combined of almost, I think it was like $4.9 trillion combined.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at like what is close to that $5 trillion mark as far as like, just like, how do you even compare that number to something? Germany's entire GDP is like $5.4 trillion.
Yeah.
So these three companies combined, they're estimating will be worth in value.
Now, worry. It's
three companies make up Germany's entire economic output.
I want put you that in perspective. To hold on to this thought. Okay,
it's wild.
We're gonna go that to break because of the timing. I want you to hold on to this thought because we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about what could go wrong. So stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And I'm Orange.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. If you're just joining us, remember you can grab the podcast to get caught up. You can check it out tomorrow. Go to littlejohnfs.com under the Educate tab, and you'll see it in our Knowledge Center. You can also subscribe to your favorite podcast place. Just look up the Little John True Wealth Show, and you'll find it there. So, okay. When we went to break, told our listeners we'd come back because we were just describing how market capitalization works and how a company can be valued super, super high. And then the question was, hey, what could go wrong in this scenario where that the market could get it wrong? Or maybe it's not that the market gets it wrong. It's just that the market changes its mind quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Walk me through this scenario. We did this during the break, by the way. This is why, like, we're also live streaming on YouTube. So if you want like the after hours clips or whatever, then you need to like watch that.
Yeah. Well, here's one way that things could change really, really quickly. So if you look at Anthropic, they just posted their first quarter where they were profitable, right? Like they just turned profitable very, very recently. And so the numbers on that company are changing daily, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're expecting their revenue to double from like 500, what did I say? 500
billion
in Q1 or
it
2.
It wasn't that high.
I think it was. It was like 400 and something billion, wasn't it?
I think you're talking about, I thought it was something like
million.
9 billion
no, it was
for
million.
The quarter.
It was million in earnings.
It was 550 million of
earnings. Net
right?
earnings.
So they have
that's
their
right. yeah.
they have their gross revenue, but their yep. net earnings is at 550, and they expect that to go up to like a billion or something.
Right. Yeah. So but they were projecting that it would go basically to $1 billion in quarterly revenue. So that's doubling, right?
Maybe it got up to 10 at the end of the year because it was a tenth of Apple, basically.
That's what it was. It was a tenth. Yeah. And so we looked at that and we're like, okay, like, yeah, you know, seems like it potentially could be a real number, you know, because they can't really fudge this stuff. They can, but SEC
but it's,
filings.
It's interesting if they really do have that much revenue. So why would you say, well, here's a company
here's why
that's
it's
got 1/10 of Apple's revenue,
right?
But it's going to have 25% of Apple's valuation.
Right. So that's the crazy part. And they're a hiccup away from a major market reaction, right? Like if because I was looking at the numbers, the BlackRocks, the Fidelities, the institutional buyers are projected to make up 70%.
The usual.
Yeah. Okay. And so if you have all of these huge hedge funds and institutional buyers that are watching the numbers constantly and they're saying, is this thing really going to grow at a steady rate? If there's a hiccup where Microsoft and Uber drop their contracts and then, oh, all
which
of a sudden.
Which they did, by the way.
Yeah. And then you you get another player that drops a contract. Well, now what if the guidance changes and it's like, well, they're not doubling their growth rate. It's only growing by 60%.
By the way. For our listeners, explain guidance briefly.
Guidance just meaning like they're issuing statements on where they believe they're going to land financially for the next.
The company is suggesting whether their profits are headed.
Right.
So the company is doing the guidance on this one. This isn't an analyst that's it's during earnings calls. The company says, we expect our earnings to be at these levels.
Right. And so I'm just in the back of my mind, like, what if they have a couple bad, you know, forecasts? The market could shed in a huge way. Like sellers could show up left and right. I got to get rid of this. I have 100% profit because the share price went up like crazy in the first 3 months and I got to lock in my gain. And if there's a bunch of panic selling around it, I mean, would it be crazy to see the share price, you know, drop 50, 60, 70%?
No, it happens all the time. Of the GameStop phenomenon.
Yeah.
Right? If everybody wants out and nobody wants in, the price collapses. If everybody wants in and nobody wants out, the price skyrockets.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to do with how aggressive the buyers and sellers are is part of what drives the short-term movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the issue here that's really hard to understand is that there's fundamental data, meaning there's math that we can look at and say, well, the company earns this much. Company spends this much. This is how much is left. So this is how much, if you liquidate all the stuff that they own, this is sort of what it's worth. There are ways that you can extrapolate what a company might be valued at, the sum of its parts or whatnot. But then there are ways that the marketplace is deciding what it's willing to pay for shares at any given point, and they don't always align. And that's the tough part right now is some of the historical ways that we look at investments. Okay, let's talk about one of the most common of all. The price to earnings ratio.
Mm-hmm.
This is not commentary on whether or not this is a good indicator. It's a common indicator, but it's not necessarily good, nor is it bad.
Right.
It just is right now. But here's what you would look at. Let's say a company has certain number of shares and we determine the profit per share. And we say, oh, well, the company makes a dollar of profit per share and the cost per share is $100. The price to earnings ratio would be 100 to 1, right? So PE ratio of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the company's stock price was $5 and it made a dollar per share, it'd be 5 to 1. The PE ratio would be 5. I think I'm doing that right. But what happens is you're making a dollar for every $5 of investment versus making a dollar for every $100 of investment. That's the idea behind a PE ratio. So when you see a PE ratio of 50, what that says is I have to put $50 into this investment for it to return $1.
Right.
If I see a PE ratio of 10, I put $10 in for a return of $1. If we were doing yield calculations, it would be really simple. We're not.
Yeah.
Right? But this is where it gets a little weird. What if the company's not making money?
That's
like SpaceX,
where it gets really hard.
SpaceX is burning through capital right now. So if you said, well, what's their PE ratio? It says it doesn't exist because there is no earnings. Now that's not the same as revenue. They might have revenue.
Oh, yeah.
But they spend more than they earn, which means there's no earnings. earnings.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think I was telling you this earlier. SpaceX inked a deal with Anthropic. So now they're working together, right?
Sure.
And Anthropic is like, hey, you know, we need a ton of compute ability because everyone wants to use AI to code now. And you have the world's largest supercomputer. We're going to pay you $1.25 billion per month to be able to use your compute power. Over $1 billion a month.
Yeah.
That's crazy spend rate. That's nuts for companies that haven't even gone public yet. Massive
That's
deals.
Wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's the numbers are staggering, and this is why we get to the comment from the beginning of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
The math is
Loop
hard.
It back. Yeah.
Right? The math is hard. So let's bring this around. Matt, why is the math hard? What's the hard part about this that as an investor or right now, we're professional money managers in addition to being financial advisors here. So what do you see as a challenge?
Here's the challenge. You have to weigh, as an employer, right? If you're a business, you have got to ask yourself, what's the best investment of my money? We saw Microsoft ditch their deal with Anthropic and saying it's too expensive. We're going to use internal products. Uber burnt through 12 months of their AI budget in four on Anthropic. They're like, we can't afford this. And so what we're seeing is some of the big companies are already, before AI really takes its leaps and bounds, they're walking it back and saying humans are cheaper. I can hire someone to code cheaper than I can buy the credits for through these AI players. Energy's expensive. Electricity's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying tokens. I can just go hire someone and get the job done for less money.
Let me give our listeners just a very brief insight into what's going on here. AI is graduating from what would be considered intelligent prompting, where what you do is you ask the AI to behave in a certain way and then answer questions in that behavior form, to acting as an agent on your behalf, meaning ask it to do a task and it will figure out how to do the task.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really different things. Well, the way that the AI is using compute power is in what they call tokens. So when the AI needs a certain amount of compute power, it takes a token to do it. And I'm oversimplifying here, but that's okay. The point is still going to work out. A really complex task takes more tokens. If you ask AI to figure something out, it will figure it out. And what happens is it becomes a little indiscriminate about its token usage. And if tokens are the equivalent of spending money, which in effect they are because there's both power and the way that these AI companies are billing is they're saying, I will bill by the token and you'll pay per token for usage. So now you have this complex system burning through cash, essentially, in order to operate. And I think what Microsoft is figuring out is, you know, we have other tools that we can use for coding and assistance that are cheaper to use. And when we give the AI the run of the place, it doesn't control costs as well as a human can.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cheaper for them to keep humans in the loop than to just let the AI sort of go girls gone wild or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Can you even say that on the radio?
I
don't know.
Can.
But everybody gets it, right? It's like at some point you're like, oh, well, we're just going to throw all the rules out and who cares what the behavior is. Like, oh, bad idea.
Yeah.
Right? That's where the bad stuff happens. So, yeah, that's the issue that we're starting to see is, and companies are saying, we are not going to just give a blank check to the AI ecosystem
right,
and let it run wild because it lacks something really critical. We talked about this too, right?
Yeah.
What happens when you give an uneducated teenager a credit card?
Yeah.
Bad behavior.
Yeah.
Okay? They lack discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem right now is AI, it will solve the problem any way it can conjure it. It doesn't necessarily know how to solve it best.
Or the right way.
The right way. It can just kind of run with it. And all I can caution is every time you hear somebody says, oh, AI is amazing. It does all these things. So, okay, but what are you selling? The people selling you AI tell you AI is amazing and it does all the things. If they're using AI and they tell you it does all the things, now you have my attention.
Yeah.
But if you're just telling me I need it because look at all the things I can do. So what's it doing for you? It says, well, it's telling me how to sell it.
Like, mm-hmm.
Interesting.
You know what's crazy is even now, like you start reading some articles and you can tell now. at least I can, when it's an AI-generated article, and I'm seeing so much error in it, like graphs that are being published, and I'm like, the market wasn't down that year. Like, the graphs are off, and I'm like, I feel bad for people that don't know because they're just reading this stuff blindly, and I'm like, that's garbage. Like, none of the stats are even accurate. And so I think there's a lot of misleading info out there.
I'm smiling because do you remember probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, what I would say about AI? There's three types of people with AI. Do you remember those three types?
Yeah, the one of them was like, you've got the one person that's going to use AI and become like much more proficient and successful with it. And then I don't remember the middle one, but the last one was basically, then there's going to be the person that uses AI. They don't really know what they're doing with it. And then they're just going to be in worse off trouble because they used it in the first place.
There's the people that are, they're so bad that AI actually makes them look better, right? It actually improves outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
There's the people that use AI really well and they become experts. And then you have people in the middle that rely on AI indiscriminately and they go way faster down the wrong path.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we're starting to see, and you just illustrated it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm looking at the clock. We're running long. Let's do this. Let's grab a break, and we will come back on the flip side of this, where we have got to figure out how, as investors, we need to look at value, not just individual companies, but at the marketplace at large. What might this mean?
I like it.
Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And I'm Art.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we've got a whole group of us in studio. So Dave Littlejohn with
Matt Dixon
and
Emma Art.
And Emma is going to ask other questions. She has
yes,
questions. Right? And then she's like, I'm just fascinated, though. I'm just listening. I'm like, no, chime in. But Matt, you were going to kick us off.
Yeah.
So we've just talked about the markets at large. We've talked about how valuations can be expanded or contracted rapidly and how AI is this huge swath of the market. And that suggests that it could either increase or decrease the big chunk of the market quickly.
Yeah. Yep.
So what does this mean?
Yeah, we were kind of left people hanging with this concept that, you know, Uber and Microsoft are looking at humans and saying, well, you're cheaper, so we're going to cut some of the budget or reroute our spending on AI.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess one of the questions I'd have for you would be, do you think that a lot of companies kind of ignore that fact and they say, you know what, we know that humans are cheaper, but we're going to continue to go the more expensive route with AI because we want to win the AI race and we don't really care what it costs. We'll be, you know, sucking on our profits for the next year or two, but that's okay. Let's still stick with AI because we want long-term to go the AI route.
So there's this subtle thing that you said in there that I want to highlight.
Okay.
Because depending on which version of this, the answer changes.
Mm.
You said, would they just, I think you used the term sucking on profits,
mm-hmm.
but if you think about, you're saying there's profits. So if the company has profitability,
right,
would they stomach lower profitability in order to simply push the AI further?
Right.
I would suggest, sure, they could, because there's profit.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point, investors expect return.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of doing it, right? If it's profitable, then you may be able to make the rationale that, well, we're buying market share or we are trying to reinvest in some form of experimentation. So there's still spin available. I think if it's not profit, but rather deficit spending, there is a point at which companies can run out of money or can run out of investor support. And so that's different because, you know, you can't deficit spend with money that doesn't exist permanently. Mm. Private sector doesn't have a printing press. I know it sometimes feels that way when you see these giant companies. It's like, where does the cash keep from coming from? And it the way it shows up is you bring more investors on by diluting the company, selling some shares privately at a higher valuation because those people want in because it's closer, right? Mm-hmm. When the company's brand new, scary, might not make it. But now we're way down the path. Mm-hmm. Look at all this infrastructure we have. We're this much closer. The company's going to get IPO'd pretty soon at a huge value. It's not too late for you to get in at a cheaper point. Yeah. And so more investor dollars flow in. And the key is sometimes the company gets diluted. It's not like, well, there's a 10,000 shares of stock and that's it. It's like, no, there used to be 10,000. Now there's 20,000 or 50,000 or a million. And so you just keep printing new shares. The existing shareholders get diluted and the new people buy it at a higher value.
A lot of people don't understand that about the investment landscape. And, you know, I think it's really worth monitoring when you go to look at a company. Like, what have they been doing lately? Are they doing a bunch of buybacks where the company is actually buying shares back to then, you know, increase the
which would rarely happen pre-IPO.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Rarely would that happen because what that would suggest is a company's not headed toward IPO. That company is instead trying to stay private.
I'm speaking like non-IPO companies that are just out there. They've existed for 10, 15 years. And it's like a lot of people don't think about that, though, when they're investing in long-term companies.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So anyway, that's why the question's fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. Because, if it's profits, they may choose to reinvest to buy market share, maybe to outweigh somebody else that's burning through capital and maybe they fail. So they're just holding their breath longer. There are lots of strategic reasons that could happen. But if the company is not making money, there comes a point at which shareholders get impatient. Mm-hmm. And we don't know that point yet. Right now, there's still a frenzy for AI. But what this reminds me of is the dot-com era, when everybody had to get in. And it didn't matter how stupid the idea was, throw money at it, it's going to print more.
And for a while, that's the crazy thing.
And it did until it didn't.
Yeah.
And that's the issue with AI that I see is I'm just willing to be a pessimist on this.
Are you the first monkey to jump off the carousel or the last one?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not jumping off the carousel per se either. I am very cautiously watching and saying these numbers, as they continue to get more and more comical, suggest to me at some point, I've said this for years, trees grow toward the sky, but not to the sky.
That's a good way to say it. Yeah.
And so that's the issue here, is that there comes a point at which the valuations are unsustainable because investors look at this and say, okay, SpaceX, let's just theoretically, SpaceX IPOs, it's a $20 trillion company. It represents the entire US GDP and it's not making money. And you have to look at this and say, how can they possibly earn enough revenue to be worth that ever? You know, and it's like, well, they're just, Elon Musk is going to invent something else. I'm like, Elon will not live forever. Okay. He's in his 50s now. So I'm like, do you expect him to live for eternity? It's like, well, he's going to Neuralink himself into an AI computer and he'll just keep going. Like, maybe, but and then he's going to ship himself to Mars, right? So it's just like, it doesn't make intuitive sense that it would go forever. And ironically, I bet you that if he were in here, one, he'd be like, why am I talking to you? You're nobody. But two, he'd go, no, that's ridiculous. Nobody lives forever. He'd be the guy to say it. But investors are like, no, there's got to be a reason to be optimistic. We're going to find a reason. I'm like, at some point, the valuation is just stupid.
Yeah. We'll see where the final numbers land. It'll be interesting to see.
It will. So
just get out your popcorn. We're about to have a show.
Well, the thing that concerns me is once the tide starts to go out, that was the problem with the dot-coms, is once somebody got the idea that this was overbaked, it was like watching a sweater unravel. Like, they just started pulling that thread, and it just kept going and going and going. Before you know it, there was no more sweater. The NASDAQ fell, like, 80%. That means the value, when you look at, in aggregate, all the different stocks, 80% decline. Didn't mean every stock fell 80%. A bunch of stocks stopped being stocks. Like, there's wall art somewhere of companies that used to exist, and you can see the shares of what used to be.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of NASDAQ stocks from the 90s on that list.
The graveyard of stocks.
Exactly. So I still believe that investing is not the same as speculating. And so I am very aware and cautious when you start to see valuations, especially when everybody starts telling you, oh, it's time to get in for whatever reason. I'm like, mm-hmm. well, okay. But when you get that kind of sentiment hype around something, rarely is the market right. Like, rarely does the mob get it right. Mm-hmm. That's my issue. It's like mob thinking is generally the lowest common denominator, not the other way around. Hmm. So there you go.
I like your take.
So anyway, that is, yeah, that's my take on it. Notice we're really sneaky about, I didn't pick a single position that I was saying it's going to go one way or the other. I was just saying, careful, when things start to get really expensive, maybe you should believe it.
Yeah, I think the biggest one, too, for investors to think about is don't put all your eggs in one basket unless you're willing to lose the eggs, right? Because it's like,
or
hey, if you want
the basket. That's the thing that concerns me is everybody says, oh, I'm going to, you know, I got a bunch of tech stocks. It's like, I got news for you. When you start to see 92% correlation across all those different assets, are you really diversified?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
What would you tell, like, if you could just, I mean, you've been through a lot of market cycles, right? And you've seen the dot-com.
I think
you
just called me old in the most polite way I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, you're rivaling Buffett here for the number of...
Oh, wow, now you call me really old. Got it.
You should see the camera. No. But, so, you've seen a lot of this stuff. What would be some kind of advice you would give investors who are in the market right now versus the investor that maybe has new money and they're like, I don't know what to do with this. Kind of, I mean, yeah.
Okay. We've got some blocking and tackling stuff to talk about.
Okay.
But I think what we do is I make everybody wait for this advice until after the last break.
Let's do it.
All right. Stick around. If you are talking about what do you do in a market like this, we're going to carefully, legally navigate without giving individual advice here, but we're still going to try to give you something to chew on. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And I'm Art.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the home stretch. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn, in studio with
Matt Dixon
and Emma Arndt.
And we've gone through, today's been one of our favorite subjects, but today was the, why is the math hard?
Well, right. We failed right. Math, you know.
This is not true, Matt. No. Matt was literally a math teacher. So that could not be more inaccurate. If the math is hard because when you start getting speculation commingled with investing, it muddies the water.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's where we're at with a lot of AI companies is there. Whether there's speculation. Anytime that you're putting money into a company that's pre-profit, you're banking on the fact that the profits are going to show up. You're speculating on that. It might be very high probability, which means the speculation level is low. But ultimately, investing always has a little bit of speculation.
Yeah.
And the more speculative it is, the more reward is required in order to justify owning it as an investor.
I feel like there's a lot of speculation this go around, right? Because everyone's thinking, look, think how many people are going to show up to buy this thing. Yeah. And if everyone's buying it, the price is going to go up, right? So just be one of the lemmings and get in line.
I think that's the key detail of this market is that it appears to me that there's a lot more speculation than other historical markets.
Oh, yeah.
Not more speculation than ever in market history. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying there have been less speculative times in the market than right now, especially in an outsized category,
mm-hmm.
right? Artificial intelligence and the amount of like market cap weighting to the major indexes that it represents right now is that may be historical. I don't remember in the 2000 dot-com burst, mm-hmm. the market being this disproportionately weighted to a specific segment of technology. Right? The NASDAQ was heavily tech-weighted, but the S&P wasn't like
this. I actually think they said that in the entire history of any stock market ever, I think that the semiconductor space right now is the, like, as far as valuations go, we talked about PE earlier, mm-hmm. just valuations as a whole. I think this is the second highest we've ever seen any like subcategory of a market ever.
I wonder what the first was.
It was something over in like Sweden or something, or it was like a European country, if I remember right. There was some European segment of a market that had some huge explosion. So, yeah.
Which is kind of hard, too, because if we look back, I remember the...
It was like a really, really long time ago, too. Like, okay. Really long time ago.
Well, that's harder to parse. Yeah. But the bottom line is that...
Basically, in recent history, this is the most expensive any segment of the market.
It's expensive, and it's fascinating because it's really... Again, it's very specific to one sector. It's not broad spread.
Mm. Yeah.
Right, it's not like everything in the marketplace is expensive.
No,
this area of the marketplace is really expensive.
But because of the market cap stuff that we talked about,
right,
it just engulfs so much of the index, and that's where I'm concerned. Like the index has gotten so heavy in one area,
yes,
that I'm like, it's not really the index anymore.
Well, yeah,
I mean
it's funny,
it is.
It's funny,
but
yeah,
it's not.
That, you know, it's like it's well, it's not really a diversified haven as it's historically been sold as.
Correct.
Right. The formula that the index utilizes has lent itself in this circumstance to overweighting in the area of the market that has performed best,
yep.
which makes it very hard to outperform the index right now. But it also means that if something goes wrong in that sector,
the burn is worse.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
there's concentration risk right now in the index. And that's not how I think they've been pitched to a lot of people.
No. A lot of people are like, look, I'm so diversified. I own 25 mutual funds over all these indexes. I'm in everything, so I'm good. And then it's like, well, let's get behind the numbers here. You really basically just own the S&P 500, which means like 40-something percent of your money is just in tech.
Yeah. So let me help people out. You asked for some quick advice, a hot take on what do people do in this market. The first hot take is that everything I'm about to say is not to be considered individual investment advice. I'm going to give you some strategic things to think about, and then I'm going to encourage you to seek a professional. And, you know, this is your mileage may vary kind of stuff. That's just the nature of how we have to do this. So none of this is actionable specifically for you, but think about it. Okay. The first is that in a market that's really concentrated like this, you want to... One of the things I would encourage you to do is encourage current valuation to review the current valuation of something in the sector that it's in relative to historical valuations. Does it seem more expensive than it has been historically?
Mm-hmm.
That's something to consider in your math. The other is how concentrated are you in a specific sector? We just discussed that and what that would mean. Okay, so one of the things that you can do, and there's a lot of free data around this, especially because many of you own mutual funds, is I want you to go and look for something called R squared. Okay? You don't really need to know what that stands for or anything. It's a statistical measurement. And what it's looking for is it's trying to explain how much of the underlying movement in your investment can be attributed to its benchmark. So most of the time we're benchmarked against the S&P 500. If you have an R squared of 0.92, then that would mean 92% of the movement in your investment can be attributed to the S&P 500. Okay? Is it a rock solid fail safe? No, but it's a really good indicator of whether or not you may actually, you think you own a diversified mutual fund, but you may be owning a phantom index and just overpaying for it because you're paying a manager extra to basically buy the S&P for you. So that's another thing. Now, if you've already got a bunch of cash in the markets, one of the things that you should look at is, should I be potentially rebalancing to avoid being overweight in a category? So that's the thing, is consider, am I risk appropriate for my master asset allocation? And if you have a bunch of money and you're trying to figure out whether or not to put it to work, one of the things you ought to consider is, do I dump everything in all at once, or do I spread it out over time and average my cost into the market? What this does is it avoids being entering the market all at once, just in time for the markets to roll over and go down. Okay. Does it reduces your returns to the upside, but it does so by reducing your risk exposure to a single volatility event. So those are all classic things that you can do. Another consideration, if you're interested in preserving principal, is to reallocate your account more conservative and then take the interest that it's earning and use that to dollar cost average back into the markets and become more aggressive all over again.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so these are all just classic blocking and tackling strategies for managing risk in your investment strategy. Beyond that, there's some tax management that and that you can do that would probably create a little bit of extra juice. We call it tax alpha for strategic buying and harvesting losses against gains. But those are the biggies. And what I would tell you is, go talk to your financial pro about how you could accomplish those. And if you don't have one, hey, we know somebody, Matt. Who do we know?
Us, 541-375-0898. And the name is Little John Financial.
All right. Well, I'm looking at the clock and we're out of time. So thanks, as always, everybody, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
And I'm Art.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.